Welcome to the Hardware Sign Podcast. In this episode, we ask the question, how much heatsink is enough? We look at water cooling and air cooling and some of the math behind it. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain. Darren, as hardware enthusiasts, we often get some pretty strange questions about personal computers.
Yes, we do.
You know, like what kind of video card should I get, or should I upgrade my PC, or will this game play on an AMD dual core or something, you know? Some are viable, some of them are personal preference, but very few of them actually have a technical reason behind them.
Ooh, I'm curious.
Today, I was asked about building a PC, and this person approached me and said, well, I want to build a computer. I have a Core i5 2500K that I built several years ago, and I really want to get something new.
Sure.
And I said, well, what are you thinking of? And he goes, well, showed me a shopping list at Newegg, and it included an Asus Z270, which is a Kaby Lake-based system, and a Kaby Lake
good choice
7700K. But nowhere on his list did he have a heatsink. And I go, well, what heatsink are you going to use? Oh, I'll probably get one of those orb things. And I go, orb things?
Now, wait, no. It doesn't come with an OEM, I take it.
No, the Intel K-Series from Skylake and above, they don't have an OEM heatsink anymore.
No, I guess that's probably a good decision because folks in that budget should be buying an aftermarket, but the Orb is an interesting choice. That's an older Zalman product, isn't it?
Yeah, that's that copper copper thing that has the, basically is a half circle, or maybe it was a full circle, with a fan that blew through the middle of it.
Oh, no, that's a pretty heatsink. I think you're thinking of like the 9500, right?
Yeah, it was a 95mm, well, here, let's pull up a picture real quick.
Oh, yeah, the 9500A. That is a classic. That's been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's got LED lights in it. I want to say this came out around the Core 2 Duo era.
Right, right. Now, Zalman, you know, they have an interesting history because they really made a name for themselves by being one of the first manufacturers to put out full copper builds, in this case, the copper fins. And they liked this radial design. They made a lot of different variations of it, some that laid flat and some that didn't. And their goal was to try to build it so the heat pipes would go around these copper fins so you could get a lot of efficiency in a small area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it maximized the surface area while keeping the fan in the middle. However, the limitations here are the size of the fan mostly.
Oh, yeah.
Because we just have a 92mm fan with some LED lights in the middle. They aren't RGB, unfortunately, but the pure copper nature of the heatsink allowed it to absorb in a really high amount of heat.
Yeah, and you know, this was a design that was widely copied, that's a nice way of putting it, by a lot of other manufacturers, and in most cases in larger designs, and Cooler Master is a great example.
So I get back to my story here, and I said, well, why don't you do an all-in-one water cooler? He goes, I've never done water cooling before. And I go, oh, well, think of it as a regular heatsink, except instead of using copper pipes to move hot air from one area to the other, we're using the power of water to push from the pump block to a radiator, and then it exhausts out your case instead of inside your case.
Now, this is a conversation that we've had a lot because the price of all-in-one water cooling has come down so much now that it can really be competitive with a good air-cooled solution. But that makes me wonder, on that processor especially, I mean, how do you know how much heat sink or how big a water cooling loop do you need?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And there is a, this is where, at the beginning of our discussion, there's some math behind this. And
can
actually use a little bit of math to determine if your heat sink will handle your certain processor. But then there's also a little bit of, investigative, hey, that's too hot, so I got to fix that.
All right, now slow down. I know that I generally tend to overcool my cooling solutions. It's one of the few areas where I don't like to skimp money for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it true that water cooling is always better than air cooling?
For the most part, yes, it is. But it really depends on the environment. Because if you have a really bad environment, like a poor ventilating case or mismatched your water cooling parts, it can really be worse than air cooling.
Okay, so we're talking about ambient temperature, I take it, right?
Yeah, just ambient temperature. Water cooling, air cooling are all going to be above ambient, or ambient being room temperature. And the idea with the early water cooling kits, the DIYs, was you wanted to have your CPU as close to ambient temperature as possible. And that was to give you basically 100% efficiency, right? So it's removing as much heat from your CPU as could be handled by the room. So your CPU would be at 30C, your room is at 30C, which is a bit hot, but
right.
Still.
So I'm looking at a test bench full of really kick butt aftermarket coolers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, let's take this Cooler Master, for example. It's a...
Oh, this is the TPC 812. This is a classic.
Now, this is a beast, and it's a big cooler, but I am still looking at it, and I don't see anything that talks about temperature.
No, actually, that's something that's not on the box.
So how...
It has everything else, though, like the size of the fan and how much air it moves and how loud the fan is.
Now, that's important, but it doesn't really support what you're saying. So how do I know... To come back to that question again,
mm-hmm.
How do I know how much heat sink I need and which heat sink to get? That seems important. I mean, am I really wasting my money on these overkill systems just for peace of mind?
Kinda.
Oh no! All right, sock it to me.
Yeah. So the way that I judge heat sinks is based off of surface area to heat production on the CPU itself.
Okay.
So for that, we're going to go look at some techie websites here, and I'll put links in the description for this, but I'm going to pull up the person that approached me. They had a Core i5-2500K.
That's a great choice. Pretty budget-friendly.
Yeah, it's Sandy Bridge. Unfortunately, Sandy Bridge-based systems are unupgradable now because you can't get those processors, which is weird because either people aren't dumping them, which is the case, and Intel doesn't make them anymore.
Well, you would think you'd be able to get support product cheaper, right?
So yeah, you should. But the important thing on the ARC, Intel ARC, is down here at TDP, which is Thermal Design Package or Power. If you click on it, it actually says Thermal Design Power.
Sure enough.
Represents the average power in watts the processor dissipates when operating at base frequency with all the cores active under an Intel-defined high-complexity workload, blah, 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 blah.
Okay, so translate that into English for me. Does that mean that it's working or idle? I'm not sure I got that.
Basically, that is how much heat the CPU will dissipate when run under full load, under full operation.
Okay, so that's like a max.
Yeah, it's basically a max. There's another measurement that they don't publish, which is like Qmax, which is the maximum heat that the CPU can withstand before it blows up and dies.
Hopefully you don't ever need to know that.
Yeah.
But I see this TDP is measured in, is that watts? W, right?
So it's in watts.
So in this case, 95 watts, and that still doesn't commute to me into anything that I can translate into a heat sink.
Well, you know about the classic light bulbs in like 100 watt bulbs and 60 watt bulbs?
Yes.
Do you know why they actually said 100 watt bulbs and 60 watt bulbs? That's how much power is used and dissipated to create light.
Yeah, okay. I guess I'm following you. So
95 watts would equate to basically a 100-watt light bulb in terms of heat production.
Oh, okay.
So that's one way that you can measure it with something that we've actually witnessed.
So I've got 95 watts of heat on this ARC processor, the i5. So I need a 95-watt heat sink.
Yeah.
All right. So grabbing my Cooler Master.
Doesn't say no. Before we go on, though, I want to look at one of the older CPUs that were very, very popular.
Yes.
This is also on the Intel ARC. We have the Core 2 quad processor Q6600.
Oh, yeah. I've got one of those in my house right now, my backup gaming PC.
Guess how many watts this one has?
It's got to be less because it's older, right?
Yeah, you would think.
So like 65, 50.
No, we're talking 105.
Oh, I'm a little shocked. I guess that's what happens with technology, though. It gets more efficient.
Yeah, it gets more efficient as you go on. Unfortunately, Intel kind of targets their CPUs at a certain wattage. So, for instance, the Core i5-2500K that we just talked about was 95 watts. If you move up to like an Ivy Bridge or even a Kaby Lake, they're also at around 95 watts.
So that's good news for those of us that never turn our PCs off, right?
Yeah, and that's also speaking to where Intel goes when they determine how fast the CPU is. They level it by wattage. So it's like, we want a 95-watt CPU. How fast can we make it go?
Okay, so let me put this in perspective. Mm-hmm. So 105 watts or 95 watts, right,
mm-hmm.
at full peak, does that take into account overclocking?
No. It does not.
So overclocking has to generate more heat, right? I've seen the pictures.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I did a review at the time of this recording, it was for an Alpha Cool all-in-one water cooler. And I tested that on a 5690K or something like that.
Right.
Overclocked. And with my calculation, it was putting out over 300 watts of power.
All right. So we've been dancing around this, and I know I'm not a fan, but lay the math on me, Dennis. How do we figure this thing out?
Well, let's go to some of my reviews. How's that?
That's a great idea. At least then we'll have it somewhere we can share with our audience.
All right, so should we look at a water cooler or an air cooler?
Let's start with an air cooler because the water cooler has got to be a step up, right? We've already established that.
So how about we look at the Be Quiet Shadow Rock LP, which is a low-profile heatsink.
I like this one, and it's a smaller unit, so it's a good place to start, I think, right?
Yeah, so on my test bench, I was using an Intel Z68 motherboard from Asus and testing with the Core i7-2600K. So it's a Sandy Bridge in that same generation that my acquaintance had approached me about upgrading his system.
So we'll put a link to this review, of course, in the notes, but I want to point out as we're passing that this one did have an OEM heatsink option.
It did. The Sandy Bridge, Ivy Bridge, and all the way up to Haswell, you could get an OEM heatsink.
Right. Okay. So anyway, not that you probably will use it, but yeah, it's there for comparison.
Yeah, so on if you go to this review and go to the benchmark page, it actually has the setup for the way the benchmark was, what I tested with. And it, I have to remind people, this is a quote-unquote real-world benchmarking scenario. So it's not like I'm testing the heatsink with a resistor that puts out a certain amount of heat production.
Okay.
We're talking testing on real CPUs and whatnot. So down below, we have the specifications, which I highlight the max TDP, which gives us our wattage. Right. And you can see that there, it's 95 watts.
Okay. So yeah, we've talked about 95. I get it.
Yeah. So when I tested this, I mark a couple of things. One is maximum load temperature, ambient temperature of the room, and how much wattage the CPU puts out. So in the charts, I have the maximum temperature, and I tested against the Intel OEM. And under full load, using Prime 95, it is at 75C, which seems like really high.
Okay, 75C. Mm-hmm. So the ambient in the room was...
it's like
24C, is that what I'm seeing?
Yep, 24 degrees centigrade. Basically, what you take is the load temperature. Well, the way I test, I don't look at the maximum load temperature because that's a bit of a misnomer in terms of efficiency of the heatsink.
Okay.
And that'll make a little bit more sense a little bit later. But we take our load temperature of our Shadow Rock LP, which was 51C, using the exact same test, and you minus that from the ambient temperature, and you divide that by the wattage of the CPU. And what that gives you is, if you know a little bit of math, Celsius per watt.
Okay.
But since I take into account that this is a real-world metric and that you can't really get 100% of the TDP using software because the CPU might throttle it, it's going to try to protect itself. And software that takes 100% load of the CPU pretty much kills the computer.
Yes.
And Prime 95 will give you that heat production, but it won't kill your computer, so to speak. So,
and that's a good thing.
It will show 100% in the task manager, which means that it's under full load, but it's not going to be a heat parasite, so to speak.
Well, if we're using the Shadow Rock LP as our baseline, I should point out that it baselines against the Intel OEM that it came with, 75 to 51, so roughly a 33% increase over OEM, which is kind of impressive, right?
Yeah, and that's if you use the standard load temperature. I use a Celsius per watt, and as a real world benchmark, I only take 85% of the total wattage output. And basically, you divide that, and it comes to 0.33 Celsius per watt.
Woohoo!
And that number doesn't mean much by itself until you compare it against the overclock score.
Okay, well, I see lots more numbers here, but those are your overclocking settings, it looks like.
I bumped it up to 4.5 gigahertz. You have the stock temperature, which is 51, and then overclocked, it's up to 62.
Well, that's not a huge increase in temperature, I guess.
No, it's not. So unfortunately, though, since I'm overclocked, we have more heat going out of the CPU, so we have to compensate for that. And I have this big math formula here that is basically saying we need to account for the frequency and also the additional voltage to figure out how much extra wattage is being pumped through the CPU. And with this, my settings at 4.5 gigahertz, it actually increased the CPU wattage output to 143 watts.
Okay, but I see that your formula ended up with the change of Celsius per watt of only 0.31, which doesn't seem like a very big increase.
It's actually a decrease, meaning that...
Oh, smaller numbers are better.
Smaller numbers better. And in this case, that means that this particular heatsink became more efficient under the overclock condition, likely because the fan started spinning faster.
Right.
But what you want to look for is the cusp, because every heatsink has a thermal capacity. And that thermal capacity is how much heat it can take before it starts to collapse and basically cannot dissipate any more heat.
So does that mean that it just stops functioning, or you just anything over that is dissipated? How does that...
When it reaches its thermal capacity, then it begins to overheat. Say, for instance, in your car, you don't have enough water in your radiator and you go out into the desert and run your car like 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
You don't have that ability to dissipate any of that heat, and it ends up building up.
Eventually it's going to die or bake your system or both.
Yes. So in this case, with this particular heatsink, you could run 4.5 gigahertz nonstop and still not reach the thermal capacity of that heatsink, meaning that it is very efficient.
Okay. Well, I like this as a good start here, but I still, against OEM, don't know that we really got a clear picture of the efficiency of this air cooler. What else can we compare it to?
Well, we can look at the same thing with like a water cooler, for instance.
Okay.
Not this one, though. Let's see. Let's go and look at, what do you like, Cooler Master or Thermal Take?
Ooh, I am running, I think, a Cooler Master in one of my machines. Let's look at one of those.
All right. So
they tend to be a great deal, and they go on sale occasionally. That tends to get them on my list frequently.
Yeah. So let's look for a Master. Oh, here we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at the Cooler Master Master Liquid Pro 240 AIO Cooler. This is one of their new ones that has a separated pump and block combo.
Okay.
An improved radiator and fans.
Oh, I remember this has got the funky pump built into it, which is kind of cool. All right, so to be fair, since we are now comparing our little air-cooled unit against this water-cooled unit, we should point out that 240 means...
Oh, 240 is the size of the radiator.
So this is not a little radiator.
No, it's quite big. It has 240 millimeter fans on it. And with the way the radiator is configured, you can double stack them. So you can have a push-pull configuration. So
one
fan pushing air in, another fan pulling air out.
Let's stop and take stock. You would recommend the all-in-one cooler at this level for what kinds of build?
These would be for like LGA 2011 style systems where we have considerably more than 95 watts of heat that needs to be dissipated.
Hence the much larger heat sink or radiator in this case.
Yeah, I like to say that for as a general rule of thumb, 120 millimeter radiator, just a single one, will dissipate around 200 watts of heat.
Oh, that sounds like a good basic measure. All right, so let's talk about how this one was tested.
Okay, so this one was tested on a X79 3690X.
3960X.
Sorry, 3960X. Six-core processor. It puts out approximately 130 watts of heat.
Okay, so that's a lot more max TDP.
Yeah, max thermal design power.
So that is based on the architecture or six cores, or how does it scale, or is that even a accurate way of looking at it?
It's not terribly accurate, but the CPU itself is more complex. It's going to create more heat. It also has more cores and a slightly higher voltage, I believe.
Oh, I'm totally ringing a bell. So this is part of why we used to talk about the TikTok. Right. So for those of you that don't want to go back and hunt for TikTok discussions, Intel used to, and it's only been fairly recently that this design model has changed, but they used to put out a new processor, and we would call that the tick, like a clock, because it would come out with a brand new design, and then they would get it out on the market, and then they would talk it, which is take the same processor and iron out the efficiency, which generally meant that you'd get the same or better performance, but a much more efficient processor if you could wait for the talk portion of the cycle.
Yeah.
Tick tock, tick tock.
And the way it benefits you is that we still have that 130 watt TDP, but the CPU will actually be faster because they made it more efficient.
Woohoo. Hey, so anyway, this one is 130 watt.
And I basically tested it against an Asetek 240, which is another dual 120 millimeter all-in-one water cooler.
Right.
So we have 46C if you test it with the air balance fans. And then if you switch it over to the air pressure fans, it goes down to 41C, which matches the Asetek temperatures.
So those are both pretty good products. Mm-hmm. And this is 10 degrees lower than we were seeing on our fancy little air cool unit.
At a higher wattage, which kind of tells you a little bit about how much more heat this particular system can dissipate versus a low profile from Be Quiet.
All right, so let's talk efficiency. What's our Celsius water? What is Celsius per watt?
Celsius per watt. And it's basically taking the temperature, dividing it by the wattage output. And we have 0.15.
So way more efficient, mm-hmm. which I guess shouldn't be a surprise when we're talking about how much more hardware we're putting in the machine.
Mm-hmm. And then if we get into our overclock scores, we have, again, 4.6 gigahertz. Considerably higher voltage from 1.2 to 1.375 to actually attain that overclock. And for some of these, I actually put extra voltage in there to put more heat into the system. And it came to
0.16.
0.16 at 236 watts.
238 watts. Dennis needs classes tonight.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. The math is a little tough to follow, but I think I'm starting to get it. So this one dissipates a lot more heat. So it's got a lot more surface area. So even at 238 watts, which sounds like an awful lot if we use our light bulbs, right? That's a lot of light bulbs.
Yep.
It's still cutting 0.16, which is less than half what we were seeing in the air cool.
So as I mentioned before, those numbers are only significant when you compare them together. So we have 0.15 in default, and then we have 0.16 overclocked, which means that we are still within the thermal capacity of this particular air cooler. You know, we could probably put almost 350 watts into it and still maintain a level temperature, so to speak. However, if we look at the max temperatures, you know, we're getting up into the 60 degree range, and that's not necessarily a scary temperature, but it's getting close to where the fans start to ramp up really, really fast, and it can start throttling.
Right. So this is when we go back to the processor specs and we say, all right, well, we're generating 60. The processor is rated at
90. Most of the CPUs won't handle anything more than 100 centigrade.
Okay.
So if you stay below that, then you're safe.
So you have a little bit of wiggle room, but you are risking damaging your equipment because obviously at the peak is when things just die.
Yeah, they die. They start to degrade. You know, if you're overclocking and you run it at super high temperature or super high voltages, it will degrade to the point where it will not maintain that speed at that voltage and still remain stable. So you start having to back it down and eventually you just kill the CPU.
So let's go back to your buddy. I mean, when you're answering the question about shopping, and we've got some great heat sinks here, how do I, when I'm looking at these things, determine how much is enough? Because we've got a pile here and only one mentions the TDP on it. And I'm going to call it out because it is that Shadow Rock product. The Shadow Rock Slim, or SL.
Yeah. Well, you actually probably should have pulled that one up in the review, but this is basically a 120 millimeter tower, and the Slim is the width of the tower itself.
Now, this is a great product, and we like Be Quiet because they really do make an effort to provide a quality product that isn't noisy, and I mean, what more can you ask for? They do cost a little bit more. Keep in mind that most people only buy one of these per system, and that system could last you, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, depending on how picky you are. But I look at some other ones, and we've got a Cooler Master Liquid Pro 240 that we've talked about, the AlphaCool 120 CPU Black that we just reviewed, an awesome product, and a couple others sitting here. And as I'm looking at the packaging on these, I don't see anything that I can translate directly over into TDP.
No, the closest one you have is the Shadow Rock Slim, and I believe that one is rated at 160 watts.
Right, and they call that out, and they're proud.
And that is, when I tested that heatsink, I want to say that that was a very accurate number.
Nice.
In the way that I was testing, because if you look at the two numbers that are only comparable to themselves, it started to rise when you were overclocking. So I think it was like 0.2 or something like that default, and then it went up to 0.35 overclocked, which means that it started to heat saturate to the point where it might start to collapse.
If I were to look at the hierarchy of these things, we know that that's a little bit more premium than the Cooler Master or TPC 812, probably, although they're very similar in size.
The 812 is a premium heatsink, which is one reason I held on to it. It, in terms of architecture, it's a multi-heat pipe tower, but it has a vapor chamber in it as well. And testing that, you could see where the heat chamber took over from the heat pipes when the heat pipes started to saturate and it was able to handle a lot more heat.
Oh, and here I was selling them a little short because they didn't have a TDP on their package.
I know, and that is one thing that's missing from a lot of these. Like, we look at the Master Liquid Pro 240, there's nothing on there either. It just talks about the pump, how loud the fans are, how much air the fans move. Those are the metrics that a lot of the consumers understand.
Well, because we have to do math, right? No one likes to do math.
No, nobody likes to do math. So in speaking of these products that are on the table right now, the Be Quiet Shadowrock Slim, I would recommend for LGA 1150 processors.
Right.
And that would probably be the max. That would give you a good thermal headroom to the point where the fans aren't spinning up really fast, and it'll keep the CPU cool and does allow you a little bit of overclocking.
Okay.
And that's the 160 watts TDP max on the CPU is testament to that. The 812 I could recommend for 1150s and also 2011 CPUs.
Right.
Partially because it has that vapor chamber design that allows it to handle more heat. And it's still 120 millimeter cooler. It's considerably thicker, so it has more surface area to dissipate heat. It's just designed to handle that.
Okay, so now I'm looking at one of these AlphaCool products, and it's 120 millimeter.
Yeah, the default product, well, I should mention that AlphaCool products come in four different configurations based off of what radiator you want to have on there. The 120 millimeter has a thicker radiator, but only 120 millimeter fan. But you can also buy it that has a 240, a 360, and a 280.
So I guess I would, on paper at least, consider this a step up even from the Master Liquid Pro, for example, because you have some flexibility in the design. I know you just reviewed this. We'll put a post out there. Mm-hmm. But you did some silly stuff with multiple radiators. At least it looked silly.
So the difference between all-in-one water cooling and DIY water cooling, do you have any idea what that is?
Do it yourself. Like the build we put in my machine.
Exactly. It is where you buy the pump separate, you buy the hoses, you buy the blocks that go on to the CPU and the video card, and then you assemble the entire thing together. Oh, you have a radiator too.
Yes.
With all-in-one, it is basically an all-in-one package. So you have the radiator, the pump, the hoses, and the water all together in the one sealed unit.
So the advantages are pretty obvious to me, at least. You don't have to know what you're doing.
Exactly. It works a lot like an air cooler and can be retrofitted into just about any system.
And I think I've mentioned a lot that water cooling is always better than air cooling. And maybe some of you out there picked up a little sarcasm in that. And why is that, Dennis?
Water cooling is better than air cooling partially because of the thermal capacity of water and the ability to remove the heat out of your case so that it blows outside the chassis instead of inside and actually heating up your heatsink as it's cooling it, so to speak.
Well, I like the sounds of that and the flexibility of adding more fans, larger radiators like we can in this AlphaCool product is even better.
Yeah, that is actually the big major change between the AlphaCool and a standard all-in-one. For instance, with the AlphaCool 120, you can pull it out of the box if we want to.
Yeah, let me grab that.
Yeah. And while he's doing that, I will explain that.
Make a noise.
With the AlphaCool product, it allows you to expand it. So in the standard all-in-one, it's an all-in-one sealed unit. You can't fill it up, you can't drain it, you can't swap it, you can't add a video card block to it. With this AlphaCool from Ice Bear or Ice Bear, I don't know, it's German. It stands for Ice Bear.
I like thinking it says Ice Bear because that sounds like cooling.
Well, that's actually how it translates into English, believe it or not.
Cool.
But with this one, we have a full copper radiator that is a lot like their Nexos line. And believe it or not, the fittings here on the end, you can remove those and they have G-quarter fittings inside there.
That seems like a nice plus for, you know, working your way up into serious do-it-yourself then. Mm-hmm. And this is a big cooler for just a single fan solution.
Yeah, well, the radiator is thicker than you would normally expect. So it has more surface area inside. Believe it or not, this particular unit performed as well as a Asetek branded 280 all-in-one.
All right, so give us a number. What's its TDPCW? I still am not getting the math down. Yeah. The Celsius per watt,
Celsius per watt. You know, I'm going to go to the review right now and I'll just pull it up because, you know, that's what we do. I tested this on a 5960X, which has a 140 watt TDP.
Getting on up there.
And at the default speed, we are looking at 0.25 Celsius per watt.
Not bad. It's a little higher than I would have expected, but we're dealing with a lot more wattage right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. And in overclock sense, it actually dropped down to 0.17 Celsius per watt.
Wow. And this is with this little tiny fan?
Yeah, it's with the two fans that came with the unit. So we had a push-pull configuration going on here. And part of the drop in Celsius per watt is the fact that the fan starts spinning faster. Because if you look at the load temperature, we're up at 68 C.
This is definitely a quality product, and I like the expandability function of it as a nice bridge between the all-in-one and the do-it-yourself.
The expandability aspect of it, as Darren is holding this right now, this radio, right?
Yep, yep.
One of these hoses is not like the other. You can separate it in the middle. You basically unscrew it, and it has a couple of quick disconnects in there.
Now, whoa, slow down, because then I'm going to leak water, right? How did...
No, it's got little valves in there. So it works a lot like the air hose that you would use to fill your car tires. You know how it plugs into the air compressor and then it's basically sealed?
All right, good. Because I get a little nervous anytime that water is present in my PC, even today.
With this unit, it's completely sealed. This disconnect here screws together. And when it's apart, there's valves on each side that close. So there's a little bit of residual water in there, but it doesn't come gushing out. By separating this, we can loop in one of the AlphaCool water blocks that would go on a video card, for instance.
Nice.
It has an all-in-one, it's pre-filled. Or you can add 1, 2, 3, 12 radiators to it.
Sweet.
You could buy two Ice Bears and link them together if you wanted. The sky's the limit in terms of using any of the AlphaCool ecosystem to link together to build your water cooling loop how you want to see it.
So let's spoil the review a little bit. You're getting a high-quality, solid copper radiator, which I should point out is kind of rare in an all-in-one solution.
It's actually the rarest of the rare because, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, the radiators in standard all-in-ones, Asetek, Coolit, any of those, they're made from aluminum.
Well, aluminum's pretty efficient, right?
It is. It's super efficient. And it's light. It's inexpensive. It just works. But everybody is, oh my God, we can't use aluminum in our loops because it will destroy our copper blocks, which is actually backwards. It destroys the radiator. But that's for another discussion. And, you know, the block that's in an all-in-one is copper and the radiator is aluminum. So it's like, you know, somehow they figured out the corrosion thing and it's not going to happen. So...
Well, and I think I remember this discussion that even if it did corrode, it would take longer than the life of most normal PCs.
Yeah, the pump in the thing is going to die before the radiator explodes.
Speaking of pumps, this particular product has a pretty cool water block pump combination with a window on it, which is definitely worth looking at the review for. I have to ask, how much more do you pay for the premium product?
You know, I want to say that at Newegg and some of the other area retailers, as of this podcast recording, it's like $130.
But that's not really any different than most of the higher end all-in-ones anyway.
No, I mean, you can get the Thermaltake Water 3.0 280, which is a 280 millimeter radiator with the ring fans, and it's $136.
Wow. Well, definitely a great reason to check out this brand, and they're new to me, so that's very cool. Lots of advantages here for not a lot more price. And I think, you know, you should look to the review for more details, of course, but I want to come back to air cooling versus water cooling and take it one step further. This being an enthusiast website, we have access to some super cooling methods, a couple of different ones, phase cooling, and also we dabble in some crazy super cooling with exotic liquids like dry ice. I guess I couldn't call it an exotic liquid.
No, it's more like a solid, really.
And, you know, LN2. Mm-hmm. So that being said, how much better, how much different is that? I mean, what kind of CW rating would a super cooling method have?
You know, I never measured it, partially because once you go below ambient, the calculations don't work the same way. But I can tell you that the single stage phase that I have that I use for a lot of my reviews and just general overclocking was designed to handle 300 watts of power. And I can attest to that because I have set up systems there that output around 300 watts of power and it starts to collapse the phase.
So put that in perspective for me. Like, what is the maximum wattage that you could expect in a modern CPU? I mean, is there a number?
There's not really a number because, for instance, when you are running liquid nitrogen, say 5 gigahertz, you have 1.5, 1.6 volts. That's going to be close to maybe 400 watts of output. But since you're using liquid nitrogen to cool it, it becomes more efficient. It's going to use the power more efficiently. And the temperature is going to be negative instead of positive.
Okay, so not a really a very good comparison, it sounds like.
No, not so much.
And it's not very sustainable anyway. I mean, who's going to sit there and feed it dry ice or LN?
The only one that's sustainable at sub-zero temperatures is a phase-style machine where you're using refrigerant and a compressor and a big old radiator. They sound like an industrial refrigerator. So it's not something that you're going to run all the time in your house and actually enjoy it. It'd be like going back to the early 2000s when we had those little screaming 60 millimeter fans and stuff.
Lots of them. Oh, I remember those days. You didn't want to be in that room without headphones.
In terms of all-in-one water cooling, I would say, you know, if you're going to put a single fan, 120 millimeter AIO on a system, it would be in the 1150X sort of range. That would be the maximum that I would suggest. If you're going to go with LGA 2011, then you start going into your dual fan units, either a 240 or 280 or something larger. If you are really into making sure that your system runs extremely quiet, the larger the radiator, the better, because that way you have less air moving through it, a lot more surface area, and to the point where you may not even need to turn the fans on.
Nice. I like that as a solution. Okay. Well, we started out with your buddy needing a heat sink and his Zalman fan, a classic.
Classic.
But not necessarily a bad classic. But based on our discussion, what would you recommend for his processor combination in his build?
Actually, I recommended the Water 3.0 280, partially because I was familiar with the product and it was easy to install. That was also one something, you know, he never used water cooling before. He was a little confused of water cooling being all-in-one, not really water cooling.
Right.
But I suggested that one because it's easy to install, and it has large enough fans that it would fit nicely in the radiator spots in the case that he chose, which was like the Corsair with the tempered glass all over it.
Sure, and we haven't really talked about that because the case is pretty critical on determining what water cooling is going to work and how much airflow you're going to get, which affects your ambient temperature.
It affects everything. If you don't have enough air moving across anything, it's going to overheat. That
makes sense.
The way it is.
So a great recommendation. We've talked about a lot of different products in here that we will link to in the show notes. But I think more importantly, we've made a good case for paying attention to what your cooling solution can do and what kind of processor need you have, which is not something even as an enthusiast that I really think about very often, if ever. And that does mean that you can safely kind of overkill your cooling if you don't want to worry about the math. But it also means, contrary to what I like to do, you might be throwing money away that could be better used on other components or a better cooling system. So with that in mind, check out those reviews and let us know if you have any questions about cooling or the cooling math in our forums or via our Facebook.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2017. Thanks for listening.